Holiday parties, family gatherings, shopping and cooking with friends and family, these are the warmer images associated with the holiday season. But for some people, it's far from being the most wonderful time of the year. The so-called holiday blues shouldn't be taken lightly. We're talking about mental health here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It may be dealing with seasonal depression, grief over the death of a parent, perhaps a hard breakup, childhood trauma, family baggage, loss of any kind. It's hard to keep these feelings contained when the focus is on togetherness this season. Rachel Henricks is a master's prepared registered nurse. Her specialty is psychiatric mental health nursing. For the past decade, she's worked as a nurse educator at UW-Milwaukee, helping students become registered nurses. Rachel, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello, Kate. It's nice to talk with you, and thank you for having me. And good morning, Wisconsin.
Well, we expect happiness during the holidays, but it can be a very difficult time of the year for some. Where is our mental health state during the holidays?
Well, for some, it is a wonderful, happy time of year, but for other people, it can be a very challenging time as they don't feel that happy or joyful. And as you introduced, the lyric, "It's the most wonderful time of the year," is true for some, but for some, they just want the holidays to be over with because it tends to heighten their awareness of loss or being alone. Some people feel blue due to extra stress. There's just a lot of pressure this time of year with work and the demands of gift-giving with your holiday, cooking, baking. Some people don't get as much sleep as usual. Some people are drinking more than usual. There are lots of contributing factors to feeling down this time of year.
And there are different levels of sadness that are part of this conversation. So can we pinpoint a definition for what the holiday blues are?
That is difficult. Even in the evidence, there is disagreement whether there is a true phenomenon of holiday blues. But the holiday blues certainly have some overlap with seasonal affective disorder, which is typically impacting people this time of year. We just had the winter solstice. We're in the darkest days of the year. Now we're getting more sunlight every day, but we're still really in dark days. That sun's setting like 4:30, 4:45, I think, here, even earlier in the northern part of the state. And that decreased sunlight really impacts that seasonal affective disorder. And then some of those symptoms also overlap with a more pervasive form of clinical depression. And there are several different disorders for major depression. It has many subtypes.
Well, before we get into depression, take us back to seasonal affective disorder. What is it, and how might we be able to diagnose it?
Well, certainly diagnosis should be with an advanced practice nurse, with a physician, with a psychiatrist, somebody who is really specialized in treating the disorder. But looking even at the National Institute of Mental Health, they are talking about that it may be related to low levels of vitamin D, and that patients are benefiting from physicians checking their vitamin D levels and initiating vitamin D therapy. That's one of the four treatments that is looked at. That person is often feeling down, feeling a loss of interest in activities they once enjoyed, feeling some difficulties with concentrating, perhaps making decisions, changes in their appetite. And also, when I think about seasonal affective disorder, I think about hibernating. That goes together with me. For me, there's often a social withdrawal that people don't want to be around others, that it's too much work, too much energy to talk with others or be at a gathering.
Rachel Hendricks is with us. She is a master's prepared registered nurse. Her specialty is psychiatric mental health nursing. We're talking about the challenges in mental health this time of year and how to address holiday blues. 800-642-1234. What solutions help you manage being sad, lonely, or stressed? Do you have seasonal affective disorder, as we've been talking about? What does that look like for you? And how do you take care of yourself? Do you live with depression? How do the holidays affect you? Call in 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Rachel, are our expectations part of the issue here? Like, the expectation is that we're all supposed to be really happy this time of year and feeling really warm toward others and our family. Is expectation an issue?
For some people, it really is an issue. We can build something up and view it in a way that skews reality a little bit. You don't have to do it all of the time. And yet, sometimes we feel like that, and then we start thinking like that. And that can become even a cognitive distortion, where we become very perfectionistic. We may see a situation as very black or white. It's got to be all done perfectly or don't do it at all. And that cognitive distortion can lead to a more pessimistic outlook on everything you're doing.
Let's go to Marcus now, joining us from Milwaukee. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So a couple of years ago, I was suffering from, I guess, what would be considered seasonal depression. There was some loss in my family. I prefer not to go into that. But this year, I had a paradigm, you know, shift of mind. And so things that were causing me stress, like doing all the extra cookies, you know, and all the other types of stuff, I took and talked to my significant other, and we decided to tone it down. And so with our kids, we've raised them in such a way that they're happy with whatever gifts they get. And so it's not about the number, but it's about the quality. And they much rather, we give them gifts where we do a project together, or we go do an activity. And so it's easy to take and, you know, give a zoo pass or something else. And then it takes and it creates more family time, providing, you know, happiness. And it's something to look forward to, as opposed to, like, I got to go stress about going out to get a whole bunch of stuff that we really, you know, don't need. Because, I mean, I feel like most people during the rest of the year, they get what they need. And so the things that you really need around the holidays is, you know, like a washing machine or something when it breaks. And it's like, that doesn't happen at Christmas, you know?
Marcus, it sounds like you've been able to strike a balance in your life a bit more.
Working on it. Every day is a challenge. But, you know, I mean, if perfection's an ideal, you know, and if
Absolutely.
You shoot for perfection, you know, you can't achieve perfection. But, you know, there's a point where you have to go, I've done the best I can, and you know that in your heart, and then you just move on.
Rachel, how do you... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I love the idea of the zoo pass as a gift for your children, and also I applaud you for encouraging your children to see everything they receive as a gift. We all are familiar with kids who have, and again, going back to expectations, you know, the temper tantrum when they open the wrong gift or they don't get something big enough this Christmas, and to realize that everything you receive is a gift. And I love the idea of that creating family memory, experiential gift. That's wonderful, Marcus.
Yeah, thank you so much for the call, Marcus. We're talking about the holiday blues with Rachel Hendricks. Her specialty is psychiatric mental health nursing. You have a line to her, 800-642-1234. Do you deal with conflicting emotions during the holidays? Highs and lows? Do you live with depression? How do the holidays affect you? What are your coping strategies this time of year? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation in just a moment on the Ideas Network. There is a difference between the holiday blues, which typically go away when the holiday season ends, and more severe depression, which lasts longer and interferes with activities of daily living. We're talking about holiday blues and mental health here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. For some, this most wonderful time of the year is actually really difficult. And nurse Rachel Henrich stays with us to answer your questions about holiday blues and how to work these emotions. The number is 800-642-1234. How do the holidays affect you? What helps you manage while dealing with the good and less good parts of the holiday season? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Rachel, another point here to look at, you mentioned earlier, we didn't go into it, is living with depression, which is another facet of this. What can we look at and as we approach depression and the holidays?
Sure. If you're having feelings of being down and blues for more than 2 weeks, and if it's impacting your appetite and your sleep, and certainly if you're having any sort of thoughts about death or suicide, I encourage you to reach out. This is really key. Don't keep quiet. It's important to let someone else know you're going through a tough time. You don't have to keep calm and carry on, as they say. Asking for help is a sign of strength. And you being able to let at least one other person know what you're going through is very valuable. It's a part of self-care. If you're somebody who suspects somebody near you is struggling, perhaps with depression, I encourage you also to reach out. This is really important. Don't keep quiet. Your listening without judgment is being present for that person and demonstrating care. It's showing that person that they have value, and it can really help them get through a tough time.
So for people who know, who are diagnosed with depression, in treatment for depression, are the holidays a challenge?
I think it depends on where they are. They often can be, because there are more demands often for people as far as work, and with the increased darkness, that's also, for some people, they are very impacted by the amount of sunlight we have. So the holidays can be a time where depression is felt more acutely, certainly.
And anxiety is also a part of this. How can we take care of ourselves during this busy season when it comes to managing anxiety?
Well, with managing anxiety, I encourage people to set limits and to break things down into smaller parts. So it may be very overwhelming to think about all you have to do in a week or in a day. Break it down to what you have to do this morning or in the next hour. And sometimes that breaking it down is really just the divide and conquer strategy, but it works, and it's part of self-care. It's also important to know your limits and to say no. You don't have to do everything that everybody asks of you, and to set realistic limits for yourself, and that includes on time. Our sleep is very key to our mental health, and oftentimes when we shortchange ourselves asleep, we feel more depressed and we feel more anxious.
Let's go to Bob now, joining us from Janesville. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. Great topic.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Well, I'm a family medicine doctor, and when winter comes along, I usually see two things happen right away. One is dry, itchy skin, and the other one are people talking about stress and anxiety and depression, especially as you're approaching and going through the holidays. And so I agree with everything that's being stated, and for what it's worth, what I talk to my patients about are, you know, I thank them for talking about a difficult topic. And then I talk to them about a recipe that they have to kind of develop for themselves. And I tell them about 7 or 8 things, and they can choose none of them, or they can choose all the ingredients or a couple of them. And if you'd like, I can kind of tell you the ingredients that I talk to them about.
Please walk through this recipe for us.
Okay. So what I talk to them about are, you know, many things that that our specialist is already talking about, which is the importance of adequate sleep, the importance of vigorous exercise on a daily basis whenever they can. Heart-healthy eating, like a Mediterranean-style diet, has been shown to make a big difference. Totally agree about the vitamin D. Mindfulness. There's some really good and easy apps, such as Headspace, which I really like, to help people kind of delve into mindfulness and breathing exercises. Obviously, if they're prescribed a medication, they should take them every day. If they have a need to talk to a therapist and need behavioral cognitive therapy, I think that that's really important. And then I make sure that they follow up with me in about 1 or 2 months to just kind of check in on them. You know, obviously assess for somebody who's suicidal and get them the care that they need. But I always tell them it's not just one thing. You know, it's a number of things that can really be helpful. But, you know, one recipe for one person may be very different from what they need.
It's a very individual.
Absolutely.
Well, Bob, thank you so much for the call. Rachel, what strikes you here?
Well, I agree wholeheartedly that it is very individualized. And the idea of a recipe, I think, is helpful for people. That what tastes good to one doesn't taste good to another, and what works for one person might be more of one ingredient and less of another. And so I like his list of ingredients and looking at working with your provider to strike your own individualized treatment plan.
One thing we haven't addressed here is stigma. Talking about mental health can also be associated with a stigma. So what is your take on that?
Well, there's lots of stigma out there, but there's also lots of stigma in ourselves that people judge themselves. This goes back to the cognitive distortions. They see themselves as a nothing or as weak because of feeling anxious or feeling down or of not perhaps being their best self this particular month. And I think that's important to address. When I'm teaching mental health nursing, I'm working on stigma in almost every facet of my course because it is the enemy of empathy and of providing therapeutic nursing care. And stigma starts really with ourselves, with being self-aware of how we're looking at mental health, mental illness, and these disorders.
How can we support loved ones as they manage how they're feeling this season and beyond?
Yes, I think, again, reaching out. Don't keep quiet. Sometimes we're thinking, well, maybe that person is embarrassed. But often they're more relieved if somebody's willing to talk with them about feeling down, feeling depressed. And I think they feel cared for when someone is checking in on them. You're wanting to listen again without judgment. Refer to support as needed. Again, we've talked about, especially if somebody is having thoughts of death or suicide, to call the Wisconsin Suicide Hotline, to get to a provider, to get to an emergency room if they are very actively suicidal. That's very important.
And what can we find at 211.org?
Oh, lots of resources. If you're someone who's looking for a doctor to talk about your feelings of depression or feeling down. If you're looking for a counselor in the area, 211 also has support groups. It would have the numbers for NAMI, the National Alliance of Mentally Ill chapters in your area that are free support groups, both for individuals with mental health challenges and also for their family members. NAMI has really great support groups for family members.
Well, Bob was talking about a recipe, which got me thinking about diet and how our diets change during this time of year. How does a diet contribute to our mental health?
Well, that's interesting, and they are doing a lot of research right now regarding diet and mental health because our neurotransmitters are, many of them, made in the intestines. And so
they're looking at that for treatment. But as Bob said, people are feeling better, we know, with kind of that Mediterranean diet. But you can have great symptoms, GI symptoms, when you're having depression or anxiety. You can really lose your appetite. You can have an increased appetite. People can have carbohydrate cravings. There's a lot of variation.
Well, Rachel, thank you so much for joining us and talking about this.
My pleasure. It was an honor to be on your show, and thank you for having me.
Rachel Henricks is a master's prepared registered nurse. Her specialty is psychiatric mental health nursing, and for the past 10 years, she's worked as a nurse educator at UW-Milwaukee, helping students become registered nurses. Up next, it's news. Then Paul Ryan is retired from Congress. We discuss his legacy and the future of the Republican Party. I'm Kate Archer Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. With us on The Morning Show, I'm Kate Archer Kent. House Speaker Paul Ryan will retire from Congress next week. His successor, fellow Republican Brian Stile, will be sworn in on January 3rd as the new congressman representing the 1st Congressional District. Ryan chose not to run for re-election after 20 years in the House, and he reflected on his work and tallied up the legislation during an address at the Library of Congress.
This House is the most productive we have had in at least a generation. To date, we have passed 1,175 bills, more than half of them with bipartisan support. And, because it is my duty as Speaker, nearly to say this, nearly 750 of those bills are still stuck in the United States Senate.
We are looking at Ryan's legacy, the future of the Republican Party, and partisanship in Congress. Arthur Sear is director of the A.W. Klassen Center for World Business and a professor of political economy and world business at Carthage College in Kenosha. Art, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation.
So there's no deal in sight yet to keep the government funded. Hundreds of thousands of federal employees will either not be returning to work after holiday vacations or will be back on the job without pay. And President Trump reiterated yesterday he's not compromising over the border wall. So where are we right now on the budget, and how is Paul Ryan in all of this?
Well, we're back to business as usual in Washington. Unfortunately, in recent decades, since the Carter administration at least, there's been a fairly regular tendency for clashes to result in government shutdowns.
So a Democratic lawmaker from Illinois, Representative Bill Foster, introduced legislation Sunday that would prevent House Speaker Paul Ryan and other lawmakers from having access to the Congressional Fitness Center during the shutdown.
Yes, and yes, I saw that during my homework for this program.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, is House Speaker Paul Ryan's legacy wrapped up at all in this government shutdown, or have you seen him distance himself from the border debate?
Well, the main point is that it's been very difficult and very taxing in every sense for Speaker Ryan to try to deal with the president. I think his image and perhaps his legacy has been hurt by the fact that he's been viewed as someone who has not found the right formula. Perhaps no one can for dealing with President Trump, but some critics, as you know, say he's been too quick to compromise. As for the fitness center, that's the kind of political stunt that makes by the Illinois congressman that makes news. What really counts is what's going on behind the scenes in terms of negotiation to end this very painful difficulty, which is something the voters clearly don't like. They've made that clear historically.
How do you think he'll be remembered as a political leader?
I think he'll be remembered in policy terms. What his supporters most emphasize and what he likes to talk about, relatively hidden in the important tax bill that passed this past year, is that enterprise zones, extremely important and very helpful tax breaks for investors, mainly but not exclusively businesses, in low-income areas passed. That's been a theme, more Republican than Democratic, since Jack Kemp, a mentor of Congressman Ryan, started promoting it many years ago. And I believe it will have a major and positive impact in low-income areas, not just in urban areas in the U.S.
Let's go to Jim now, joining us from Cedarburg. Hi, Jim.
Hey, good morning. Happy Christmas to you all. And I want to just dovetail onto what was just said. Yeah, I mean, he did. He gave us this tax reform bill last year that's going to add $1.5 trillion to our national debt. That's my understanding. And I want to say that I think it's no accident that he's retiring right now. My belief is that the Republican plan is that they have somebody able or, you know, available to run in 2020, you know, somebody that's well removed from this administration should Trump not be able to seek a second term. You know, Ryan ran and always he was always a deficit hawk. When he ran as vice president, he pushed that very clearly. You know, but then he capitulated last year to this adding to the deficit. I believe that there's a conservative idea, you know, should the government continue to rack up such a debt, eventually they're going to come back at the taxpayer and say, look, we can't pay for Medicare. We can't pay for Social Security as it is. And, you know, we have to remember that he is driven with his ideology, that of Ayn Rand and Thomas Malthus, and if people don't know what that's about, I think that's some good reading they should do over the holidays.
Jim, thanks for the call. Let's get our two way in there.
I think the caller makes several very good points, and more succinctly than I have in some ways, I must say. The fact that he was a deficit hawk, and then not exclusively because of President Trump, in effect, not only compromised but changed a lot to accept a large deficit-producing tax act. I think that has hurt his legacy, at least short-term. Ayn Rand is a thinker who was very prominent in the 50s and 60s especially, who emphasized in her endless novel Atlas Shrugged and a movie with Gary Cooper, I believe, way back then, a kind of hard-nosed, some would say cold-hearted approach to society. And conservatives who saw welfare programs as something that was essentially harmful to America seized on her ideas. And Ryan has been associated with those ideas to a degree. But in practice, I think he's been much more pragmatic. And as I tried to indicate, not so succinctly, he, in terms of things like the enterprise zone emphasis and success in the tax bill, I think he's shown a pragmatic approach to politics, and his pragmatism and a reputation for getting things done and some basic integrity is the main reason I think he became speaker.
Art Sear is a professor of political economy and world business at Carthage College. We're looking at the legacy of House Speaker Paul Ryan as he wraps up his time in Congress officially next week. Gathering your thoughts at this point as well, 800-642-1234. What do you think of House Speaker Paul Ryan's decision to retire from Congress? And what do you think it says about the state of the GOP today and about politics in general? What do you think of Paul Ryan's legacy? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Rich in Rhinelander now. Hi, Rich. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Thank you. To me, Paul Ryan remains a deeply tragic figure. He didn't want the job in the first place, and he knew that the USA was a deeply divided nation geographically, racially, religiously, culturally. I'm going with John Boehnert's take on what has happened to the Republican Party. In an interview, John Boehnert, former speaker, said, there is no Republican Party. The Republican Party is essentially in hiding someplace, or there's a Trump Party. And unfortunately, because Paul Ryan was not a strong enough independent leader when he took the position, he more or less backed President Trump, even in some of the most ridiculous stances that President Trump took. He was not a forceful voice, and I can't possibly see him succeeding if he does make a run for the presidency in 2020.
Art Sear, your thoughts. Where is the Republican Party? And as Rich said, was Paul Ryan not a strong enough voice?
Well, I think when you're a legislative leader, if you want to succeed for any length of time, you can't be too independent a voice, especially in the role of Speaker, historically and currently, dealing with a large and still rather diverse House of Representatives. To get things done, you've got to bridge both parties. And the really successful speakers have done that. The Republican Party currently, I think, has a serious problem with our current president. But he was elected by the Electoral College, and he does represent a very broad and very large constituency of discontent in the U.S., especially outside of the metropolitan areas where major media and public discussion in the media is concentrated.
So Rich mentioned that Paul Ryan didn't want this job. We've heard that before. Is Speaker of the House somewhat of a thankless job?
I think it's become increasingly thankless. Congress has never been popular historically in opinion polls and anecdotal evidence. It's important to keep that in mind. But we're living in a time when public service generally is denigrated. Unfortunately, it was an important theme that the president used in his successful 2016 campaign. And I think the caller is absolutely right. For some years, during and after World War II, I think in part because we were trying very consciously to imitate our British friends, who were then our vital allies, we tended to see this House speakership as rather above partisanship. And Sam Rayburn, who was the longest-serving speaker in modern times, Nancy Pelosi's probably going to succeed that record, he used that very effectively in the 40s and 50s and into the 60s. And a truly brilliant politician in the current negative environment could try to exploit that tradition. So far, recent speakers have not, and maybe it's not possible. But there is some room for the speaker to try to appear to be above politics and to be above politics in a partisan sense.
He said his reason to retire was specifically family-related. Should we read the way Paul Ryan is framing his retirement as a sign of perhaps his future political ambitions?
Yes, indeed. He's clearly going to be remaining very prominent in the media. He's got some new videos on YouTube, and he may well be positioning himself for a 2020 run. You don't need me to tell you that politicians don't necessarily say what they're really thinking and really intend to do. I did have the honor of being around the speaker fairly regularly, not frequently, because I've been on his education committee, which is mostly K through 12 educators. Our president at Carthage at the time, Greg Campbell, just physically did not have time to accept.
Well, let's talk about your interactions in just a moment. We have to pause here talking with Art Sear as our guide on the legacy of Paul Ryan. Your thoughts as well, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Republican Representative Trey Gowdy of South Carolina introduced House Speaker Paul Ryan for his farewell speech at the Library of Congress last week. He recalled the moment when then-House Speaker John Boehner stepped down from his position and said the party needed to convince Ryan to take the job because he was unifying and universally respected. Ryan acknowledged in his farewell speech that he did not have an answer for today's political climate.
I knew when I became Speaker, I would become a polarizing figure. It just comes with the territory. But the one thing I leave most proud of is that I like to think I am the same person now that I was when I arrived.
We are looking at Paul Ryan's legacy, the future of the Republican Party, and the partisanship divide in Congress. Art Sear is our guide. He's a professor of political economy and world business at Carthage College in Kenosha. You can join in the conversation as well at 800-642-1234. Do you live in Paul Ryan's district? Did you vote for him? What might you miss about his leadership, his service? 800-642-1234. 1-800-273-4. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Art Sear, you were saying before the break there that you served on his education committee and you had been around the speaker from time to time. Can you talk a little bit more about that interaction and that service on that committee?
Most important, the last couple of meetings, he struck me as a man whose heart was really not in the job the way it had been previously. He seemed worn down, and one could infer a fair amount of frustration as well as fatigue. At the same time, he's very quick, very smart. He has the successful politician's gift for names, which I've always admired and envy. He's very, very sharp, a policy wonk who knows the details and could deal with educators who were often quite passionate and frustrated themselves, as well as knowledgeable about the ins and outs of education. Overall, he was very impressive, but not surprisingly, being speaker clearly was wearing him down.
Well, he always said he was a policy guy, and he really loved getting into the weeds, into the details on policy. And you found that true in education?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, in his case, it really was true. Like Richard Nixon and Bill Clinton and other unusually successful politicians at the national level especially, he knew policy. And I think that will be one of his major assets if he does pursue a presidential campaign.
Let's go to Kay now, joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Kay.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My comment, well, of course I appreciate Paul Ryan coming from Wisconsin and serving, representing us. Initially, when I heard him talking about Trump, initially he had negative things to say about him, it seemed. And then when he was appointed speaker, it became sort of neutral or positive. And I was wondering, is this, of course, family is important and one needs to spend time with them, but is this, and it, just to distance himself from Trump.
Okay, thanks for the call. What did we see of the interactions and how he viewed President Trump?
I believe the caller is quite right. He did seem to be compromising himself. You have to compromise to get things done, but with an extreme figure like the president, especially with serious people, in my biased opinion, appearing to compromise was too easily seen as appearing to genuflect. At the same time, it's important not to be too cynical. Their kids are in their teens, a challenging time. Every parent knows the time with your children passes all too quickly. And it may well be simply an authentic desire, and he may not be desiring to run for president. He does seem rather coy, however, when that question comes up.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, he dropped an online video series on YouTube chronicling his public service, and the videos emphasize his role as a relentless revolutionary tax and entitlements reformer. Let's hear just a bit of the trailer for the series called Decades in the Making.
A few days after he was sworn into office, I needed to know, what is it that you want to do? The first thing he said was tax reform.
Our tax system is punishing all those qualities that make America great.
It was political suicide.
It was political suicide. So why was there this focus on tax reform? Did he really, really, truly, in his heart of hearts, think that he could remake the tax system?
He certainly hoped to, and he's to be commended for getting down in the trenches and struggling to actually get things done. All too often, privileged professors like me from our perch on high lecture people and complain about this and that and the other thing. But it's important to keep in mind that, as JFK liked to say, that the politicians are actually in the trenches and trying to get things done, and it ain't easier. It's as tough as it ain't easy. It's as tough as it's ever been. It's not getting easier.
Well, we've talked about his legacy as Speaker of the House, but what about his legacy at home as a congressman in his district? What will be remembered there?
Well, he benefited from and helped encourage the enormous increase in tangible, practical, industrial, and manufacturing, as well as commercial investment in southeast Wisconsin. The controversial Foxconn investment, concentrated in Racine, just to the north of Kenosha, is the tip of a gigantic iceberg of economic investment that's going to make what used to be called the Rust Belt more and more important politically in North America as well as globally. More than half the interstate truck traffic in North America goes through our immediate area. It's something that's not often mentioned in political debates, but by definition it means anyone based in Wisconsin, as Governor Walker tried to exploit unsuccessfully in his case. It means you're well positioned for a national career if you want to pursue it.
Let's go to Bernie now in Elkhorn. Hi, Bernie. What are your thoughts?
Hi, good morning. I think it's inaccurate to call Paul Ryan and a deficit hawk. He was all for cutting social programs, including those that the recipients, like Medicare and Social Security, have paid into, like a bank account. But when it came to military actions, for example, I remember he called Saddam Hussein a new Hitler. The trillions that have been added to our deficit, and the bulk of the deficit, one way or the other, is from militarism. Paul Ryan was always for, and he was also always for, say, the bailout of the investment banks. He and both of those actions were bipartisan, by the way. And with respect to Foxconn, one of the worst examples of corporate welfare, where the public, who doesn't get a penny of the profits, a firm is being given billions of dollars. Paul Ryan helped craft, you know, support the trade agreements that took jobs out of Janesville and the entire country, and that was bipartisan as well. We can't forget Bill Clinton.
So a lot of thread lines there that Bernie is bringing up: military spending, the bailout, Foxconn. What are you picking up on here, Art?
Well, I actually share a fair amount of the caller's passion, and I think that that's a big reason why Donald Trump is now the president of the United States. To his credit, politically and professionally, he sensed that and used it in the 2016 campaign. A point that's not often made in the political debate, with all the fire and brimstone, especially in election years, is that the way to look at our deficit and debt, the deficit as a percentage of the federal budget and the debt as a percentage of our gross domestic product, the ratios currently are manageable. That's not an academic point, but you got to look at the production side of our economy. As for Foxconn, it's been particularly controversial, and obviously it was one reason why Governor Walker, heretofore a very successful politician, was not reelected yet again to a third term.
Very quickly, before we let you go here, the person replacing him, Republican Brian Stile, what are you watching for there?
A sign of independence. So far, he's kind of a Paul Ryan clone. He was his handpicked candidate. Like Speaker Ryan, he comes from a very prominent and influential family in the region. He's very friendly to corporate interests. He has a background as a Washington staffer, and he tries to sound like Ryan. So far, he's Ryan Light. You've got to define an independent image if you want to go somewhere.
Art, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
A privilege. Thank you so much.
Arthur Sear is director of the A.W. Klassen Center for World Business and the Klassen Professor of Political Economy and World Business at Carthage College in Kenosha. Just ahead, a New York Times investigation found that your apps are tracking you everywhere you go, and they're not keeping that information secret. We'll talk about it. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.